The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new Gotham Undercover. It's Gotham Undercover number 51. Did we notice that it was Gotham Undercover 50 last week?
No, we were too busy. We talked about it the week before.
And then we just glossed over it. 50. Well, we hit the milestone and we went right over it. So welcome to the second half of 100.
That's right.
Episode 51 of Gotham Undercover. I'm Karen, the Scarlet Cougar.
And I'm Jeff, X-Force 11.
We're going to be talking about Follow the White Rabbit tonight. We're part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. Find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover.
That's right. And tonight's episode was written by Steve Lillen and Brian Windebrandt, who've done work on Hawaii Five-O, Alcatraz, and Kyle XY. Mm-hmm. And it was directed by Nathan Hope, who's done work, actually directs and executive produces Lucifer, and has done work on CSI and the Fog movies. All right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, very cool. And again, it's season 3, episode 6, Follow the White Rabbit. We're not too far into the season. I kind of like it right here, where we've fallen into a little bit of a groove, but it's not too far into the season where it's like, oh, we're going to end the season real quick. I like it right here. It's a nice place to be. We are kind of coming up on the winter break, and I'm sorry, it's a break. I'm not calling it that F word. That is not happening this year, remember?
Yeah, but we, you know, listeners, we are trying to find out.
Oh, yeah. I emailed them, by the way. I forgot to tell you. I emailed our rep at Fox to ask them when we're going to get some breaks, you know, some dates for breaks and things like that. Crickets. So either they don't know exactly when or they are just not releasing that to the public yet.
So. Right, because basically if you look at IMDb and that's just, you know, people putting stuff in there, they have episodes running every Monday until the end of February.
Right, which is not going to be the case.
No, because we know that starting in February, we've got 24 Legacy being in Gotham spot. So right. It's like, when are they exactly going to break? You know, how many episodes are we going to get after 24? So there's a lot of questions. And so that's why we were kind of asking to find out how things were going to go, because we wanted to pass that along to you.
Yeah.
And so that you would have a heads up and can be really invested in being there each week that it's actually on.
So, agreed. Yeah. So hopefully I'll get an answer. Now, it's only been maybe just over a full day since I emailed them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes does not give them enough time to get back
right
to someone who is not like Entertainment Weekly. So if I hear back from them, and it'll probably be on Monday or something like that, I will definitely post it on the Facebook page to let you guys know. I'm assuming I won't get the exclusive. If I get it, then it will go out to everyone or it will be disseminated or whatever. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll find out when the breaks are relatively quickly, or at least we'll know one date. So keep your fingers crossed that we'll learn that soon. We're coming up on the winter break, though. So
right. I think that we may see ours run, you know, a little bit longer into the break than other shows and pick up a little quicker so that we can get some more episodes done before 24 starts, but we'll see.
And they may just be considering running it straight into where 24 picks up. I don't know.
Yeah, I've kind of looked. I know that 24 starts Super Bowl Sunday and then has an episode the next day on Monday and then runs for the next 11 weeks. So that puts it February, March, and April, and then that would give us in May. So it's kind of tight.
Yeah.
All 22 episodes fit in there. So we'll see.
Okay, we'll see. Yeah, they may be doing that, actually, just skipping the break altogether and making the 24 run our break.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be doing that. And, of course, they want us to have May because May sweeps.
Mm-hmm.
And they want us to have November because that's actually sweeps starts next week.
Yeah,
Halloween. It starts like it's actually started already, but Halloween will be Gotham's first episode that airs during sweeps week. So or sweeps month. Sorry. So, yeah, what is it? Red Queen. That will be the first. Yeah. Very interesting. We all know what color something is that's red, right? Not so good. Okay, so with that out of the way, all that inside baseball stuff, we'll be talking about Follow the White Rabbit, as we said, and let's give our ratings.
Yes. I gave it 7.5 awkward tea parties with your lovers, and I took it down a little bit because – just in my mind, I'm not on board with the Ed and Oswald ship. And that's why I kind of
I see.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't think Ed is either.
Well, I know he's not, but yeah. So,
and anyway. I honestly don't know whether Oswald is or not. I wonder if he's not just innocently. I don't know. We'll find more about that later. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I give it 8 maniacally repeated phrases.
I have a message for you, Jim Gordon.
Right. And of course, that was our White Rabbit from the title.
Well, we had 2 White Rabbits.
Did we?
Mm-hmm.
Isabella?
Yes. We had a White Rabbit and a white-haired woman.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Isabella a little later, because I have some interesting theories, and you have some questions, so we will talk about her later. My A story, and I hope this kind of makes a twisted sense, because I kind of meant it with a smile on my face. 6 in one hand, 12 in the other. And this is the choices that he had to make during this episode that James had to make. They were impossible choices.
Exactly.
And so that's why I made it that way, that it's just stupid. 6, obviously, and 12 in the other, which is nothing. So the Mad Hatter thinks that he's so clever setting up these things. And I don't know why James even blames himself at all for any of these things. Now, I understand he's going to blame himself because he's a good person, but he is not to blame at all. Don't you think so?
I agree. It's like he's still holding on to that bit of what we saw his character last season. And he's still trying to stick up for life, and he doesn't want anybody to perish. And he's still holding that on himself, even though he shouldn't. And I loved that Barnes actually was like, listen, you need to realize this is not on you. It's not your fault. And so I like that aspect of that conversation. But yeah. it's a no-win situation. Each one got more and more ramped up that the Hatter brought in. And, you know, he's leading up to this choice that he's going to have to make. And it's heartbreaking. And, you know, I kind of get why the Hatter was doing it the way he did. You know, he's like, are you going to choose the child? Or are you going to choose the couple? Are you going to choose the doctor? Are you going to choose the person in media? So he's leading up onto those choices. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think he's the type of guy, he's going to hate that any life is lost.
Sure.
But, you know, he's got to realize that, you know, he was in the military, and like it or not, Gotham is presenting him with military choices where neither one are going to be the best outcome that you want, mm-hmm. but you're going to have to make unfortunate choices. But some of those choices, I mean, the consequences aren't on you because you can't choose either one of those things. It's going to be a bad choice.
Right.
So he's presented with those choices. And so I just think it was interesting to see Jim's reaction, but it was also interesting to see the Hatter and his thinking and what he was going through to kind of get in Jim's head. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see that he has done research. He knows Jim's parents, his background, his love life. He went to Barbara and got info from her.
Don't you just want to punch Barbara right now?
Yes.
Right?
But I really am in still enjoying her character.
Well, sure.
Because of who she is, and so much better than season one.
Yeah.
Yes, she's one of those people that you're like, right. But you're happy to
Right, right. She's intriguing, that's for sure. But I was right. Like, why are you telling this guy all this stuff? Oh, yes, I told him how you're still pining for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. I think that Gotham is a war zone. Mm-hmm. Almost literally, and he is a soldier serving in that war. And that what a great way to put it, really, Jeff. That's a wonderful analogy. I think he made absolutely the right choice in the first situation to go for the boy. Mm-hmm. It was a shame that the wedding couple ended up dying. I mean, it was a horrible thing, mm-hmm. but it was completely Tetch's fault.
Right.
It had nothing to do with James Gordon because it wasn't his fault. And you notice James goaded him about Alice killing herself. And that mm-hmm. was kind of a thing I said last week, was that I thought that that's what she did. And I was like, well, vindicated. Yay. I kind of fist bumped there a little bit. And I think that really made Tetch mad, really, really. But with the second one, I really wanted to give James a high five, because my choice would have been, you know what? These are both grown men, and I hate to do this to you guys, but I'm not playing his game.
Right. I'm not going to put blood on my own hands by killing one.
Right.
You know, I'm going to let the blood be solely on you. If right. they die, it's on you.
Right. Now,
you know, he was, you know, the GCPD showed up and that you're trying to find the power, but, you know, he's, you know, the Hatter's ahead of that. But
right.
Yeah, again, the blood's, you know, the tables started changing, and you know, he didn't make that choice, and that prepared him for what was coming next. Right. So, yeah. Yeah.
Now, of course, the last one is, and even he makes the Mad Hatter even angrier by doing that, unfortunately. But that is exactly the choice I would have made, is just holding up my hands and going, no, I wash my hands of you. Mm-hmm. This blood is on your hands, not right. mine. So it made him even angrier, and I think he was going to pull in Lee and Valerie anyway.
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah. Right. So, but it made him even angrier. And it was, I don't know what he would have done differently, but who knows? and I think it was a pretty decent plan that James came up with to not go in guns blazing, but to take her fiance.
Right. I really like that. I like that he has seen, okay, if Barnes comes in, it's going to be wrong and they're going to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, here he knows, Mario knows the house. He can get in. He can, you know, sneak up and know those things and get in and be that backup. I thought that was really smart, and it involved him because he knew, you know, it wasn't just, you know, Jim's girlfriend on the line, it was his fiance, and so he had motivation too. So they're coming at it, you know, in a smart way, but, you know, the Hatter was just a little one step ahead there.
Right. The one mistake they made, which is something I might have thought of ahead of time, is to arm themselves before they go in, not expecting that the guns would still be there in the house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just in case there's some of his goons. I mean, James knows he's got goons.
Right.
So you might have to fight your way in. That was a mistake, I think. And of course, that ramps it up for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a show. That's when I have to, you know, hit myself in the head and say, all right, I get it. It's a show. So there's that. But that takes us up a little bit in the degree of difficulty there.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives him a choice. And he says, you know, well, who do you pick to die? And he counts to three and he picks Lee. Now, mm-hmm. I have a question for you.
Okay.
I think he picked Lee on purpose.
I totally agree. I said in the blog post that I believe that he chose Lee so that Valerie would be shot and that there would be two doctors there who might be able to save her.
Right.
As opposed to Lee getting shot and Mario being totally upset and not able to cope.
Right.
And so that, I think he totally made that call.
Okay, good. Because mm-hmm. for them to end that storyline on Lee telling him not to talk to her about it, I think that leaves us on that little cliffhanger right. of him saying, I chose you because I knew he would pick the other one
mm-hmm.
and that you would be able to keep her alive on the way to the hospital.
Right.
And so that's going to end up resolving that whole, you know, misunderstanding at that point.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was smart on his half. I think he had, like I said, he had seen where the Hatter was going and he could guess what was going to be next. And so he's thinking on his feet and saying, okay, how can I make the best of this horrible situation? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those things where I think he's coming out of his funk. He's being forced out by the Hatter. He's mm-hmm. being broken out by the Hatter. And, you know, he's starting to think of others and get beyond the, okay, I'm just doing whatever for myself. And he's starting to have to think on his feet and be pulled back into the mindset of what he had as a cop. And so I really like that forward movement again, this episode on his behalf of seeing him move back toward where we kind of need him to be.
Right. Yeah. And I really do think that's exactly where they're going with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's 100% obvious.
No.
Maybe half of the people that watch it got it, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's like 100% thing. I don't right. know. What do you think?
No, I think you're right. I think it's people who are, you know, observant and kind of into those details And, you know, it's going to be great for them. But then also it's going to be interesting story for somebody who's not. So
right.
I think the writers are doing a good job.
I think
of,
so,
you
too.
Know, pulling, you know, everybody in that way.
Yeah. So for us that kind of are anticipating what comes next, because we think that's what's going to happen, it's going to be great. And for the people that aren't anticipating that, and when it does, or if it does, it's going to be great for them too. So I think it's a fantastic way to write that. And I'm really hoping that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like 99% sure.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So it's very cool. And I really liked the, I have to say, like, the it's not the color so much, but the atmospheric conditions around the Mad Hatter storyline, how he looked when he was in the limo, the art installation thing when he was talking to James in the warehouse, where it was all TVs, where he was looking around in different ways, and even the tea party set up, I loved that sort of, it looked like mayhem, like almost that Disney tea party thing with all the cups teetering on each other, you know. I really dug it. And it looked staged, yet also chaotic at the same time, I thought.
Right. It really shows his character of... He's planning, he's thinking things out, but then he's not sane, so he's not have everything perfect or aligned and those type of things. So he's got an obsession going, and so he's planning things out, but his obsession is being fueled, and so other things kind of get neglected or haphazard. So he's kind of manic that way. So I really think that, you know, those subtle things really speak to his character and who he is, and give you insight to who he is without, you know, having a ton of dialogue to kind of express those things. So, you know, it's, once again, it's translating the comic to TV and doing it in a visual way, where, you know, comics are very visual and not a ton of dialogue. And this is kind of bridging that gap and showing his character without having to do a lot of exposition. And so, yeah, I agree. I really like it a lot.
Yeah. And it's not the general feel of Gotham, the show, because Gotham is just very dark and like blue black.
Right.
This actually does have splashes of color here and there, because that's the Mad Hatter. And so I kind of like how they kind of, I don't know, gussied that part up to make it look like that circusy mayhem sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm really impressed with how they brought him to life. It's great. Definitely. And they threw in like dark purples and greens. And then, of course, the White Rabbit. That really shocking white, it in that so dark city, to have that completely white man walking down the street. And I love how Harvey and Barnes are saying, doesn't that guy look weird? I mean, weirder than normal. And they look over at him, and of course he does. He's completely white in a city that is all black and gray.
Right.
So, yeah, I really love what they did with that. I mean, huge kudos to the people that set the atmospheres on this show.
Most definitely. The cinematographers and set designers.
Mm-hmm. Big time. Even down to like the people that make the fog on the show and all that stuff. So the grips and the prop masters and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Well, we need to talk. That's going to be Oswald and Ed, but also just Oswald, because Oswald is having some issues where he is dividing his time between being the mayor and being the kingpin of the underworld, which is how Ed puts it.
I absolutely loved that scene with Ed at the very beginning. He's such in his element. Mm-hmm. He's sitting there and he's got the mayoral duties, and then he's, you know, saying, get this paperwork to whoever and take this to such and such address, light it and run. And then, you know, Penguin comes up and he hands it. He's got two stacks of paper. Here's stuff for your mayoral duties, and here's stuff for your being crime lord of Gotham.
Right.
But he's just such an he can balance those things out. And Ed needs that, to kind of thrive as who he is, to kind of satisfy him mentally. But Oswald needs that too, because he's got so many irons in the fire.
Yep.
So it's wild.
Probably some of those being literal irons in the fire. And I like how Ed is very contrite that he couldn't find Butch.
Yeah.
He is, I think, truly sorry that he couldn't find Butch. Mm-hmm. That was a very sobering moment that the two of them had there, where he says, I could not find him. And he apologizes, and he is just completely, completely sad.
Mm-hmm.
And Oswald is a little more chipper, saying, I'm sure you've done what you can. We'll find him. You know, right now he is not our concern.
Right.
As long as I have my finger on the pulse of things on the underworld, I have my minions out there. He thinks that he's okay. No, I think that's going to bite him in the butt. But as for right now, he's okay. There's also the school, where they go to the school. And this is, of course, part of the schedule. As soon as they're done talking about Butch, Ed says, yes, we're going to go to our school today. And Oswald does not look happy. Their expressions change completely. Ed is kind of excited about going to tour school, and Oswald is not. Because he is, as we've spoken of before, not a man of academia.
No.
Whereas Ed is. So Ed, ever the forward thinker, wants to show that Oswald is a man of the thinking people as well. And if he can get Ed out there in front of, you know, the brains of tomorrow, even if Ed is just faking it, and I think this is part of his plan to make him a better mayor, even if he's just faking it, it puts a better image forth, a smarter Oswald, right?
Right. And we've seen him go and do things which are better for Oswald and get him to realize those things. And so, yeah, it's good PR. It's not fun for Oswald, but it's good PR. And, you know, Oswald's like, oh, how many grades do we have to go to?
Do we have to go to everyone?
Yeah, exactly.
It was funny. You
know, it does break him out of, you know, everything. And he sees the kid all by himself.
Oh, see, I loved that.
Yeah, you know, he's asking about that kid, and he immediately identifies with that kid because he's been in that spot where he's been the loner and the outsider and the new guy. And so he goes and says, you know, hey, risk something. Go try to be friends with them.
What if they don't like me?
Yeah, and if it doesn't work, you can push them down the stairs.
Right. And then, of course, that's the pep talk the kid wanted.
Exactly.
So off he goes, and yay, the mayor said I can push him down the stairs. That's the only A-OK I needed. That was fantastic, I have to say, that little interaction. And that interaction between the, I guess, principal / headmistress, whatever kind of school this was, and Oswald and Ed, between the three of them, it was great. Because Ed was just pleased as punch to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Oswald was not. I loved that part, though, where he talks to the kid. As much as I hated his advice, I laughed at it, though. Okay, and then we have the little miscommunication thing where he decides he's going to talk to Ed about his feelings, which I am still afraid to find out what they are. I don't know about you, but I am. And he doesn't. The first time he decides he's going to talk to him about it, he chickens out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time he says, we need to talk in private. So Ed says, okay, great. How about at your house later? I'll bring a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Weird already. Do you bring a bottle of wine to come over to your friend's house?
Well, you know, dinner parties or whatever.
A dinner party.
It's going to be one of them. Right. Yeah, two of them. But I love the lighting of their conversations, you know, the conversations that they're having when Ed's struggling to talk and explain his feelings are both in front of, you know, bright windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you know, he's looking at Ed and seeing this light, and he talks about earlier that, you know, his mom has said that there's one person for everybody,
right,
and he thinks it's Ed for him. But I love the kind of the contrast that, you know, he's kind of bedazzled by the light off of Ed, and, you know, he can't talk to him and things like that, of just the contrast of we're used to these characters being in the dark and doing dark deeds and things like that. And there's this whole lightness to the storyline that, you know, again, I'm not too, you know, on the romance between the two of them, but it's very comedic, and having that light played up on things, you know, just kind of highlights of he's kind of, you know, in a daze.
Like when he looks at him, angels sing, oh. Not just that, it's, I think it has a double meaning where it also means that the light is shining on Oswald, that like he's bearing his soul to Ed. Being vulnerable.
Right. Yeah, he's trying to, you know, we see him there at the end. We see him expressing those things to Ed, and then
quote,
we find
unquote,
out that Ed's not there yet.
Right.
But he's rehearsing everything, and he's trying to say the right words and get it out, and you know, he's just having trouble, you know, actually expressing that to him. So, yeah.
Right. Now, that is an interesting storyline, I think. And you said yet. So there's a question there. Did he ditch him completely? Or is he going to show up with perhaps a friend in tow?
Yeah, I'm interested to see, because he's going and he's picking out the wine, and as you requested, the image for the podcast blog is Ed with his head in a heart.
Right.
So,
and
you know,
it turns out that's a really good image for this episode, right? Because
he's not concentrating on anything romantic, and yet he's been the focus of something romantic. So this, you know, neon heart that he can't really, he's not really noticing, is outside of him, but is framing all around him. And then he's, you know, concentrating on finding the wine, and, you know, again, love finds him.
Yeah. And about that, let's move on to that.
Yeah.
Isabella right for Ed? Okay. So you have questions. Let me hear your questions.
So, once again, at first, I'm like, is that a figment of his imagination? Because she knows exactly what to say to him. She's not necessarily thrown off that he initially thinks that that she's somebody else. And then she follows up with a riddle for the Riddler. So I'm like, is she actually real, or is she a figment of his imagination? So that was the first question. And then I'm like, well, if she's real, why does she look exactly like Miss Kriegel?
Right.
You know, and, you know, there obviously there's the white hair and the lack of glasses and that kind of stuff. But is she a clone? Is she a twin sister? Mm. You know, is it a parent trap situation where, you know, I don't know. I've just got all those questions about who is she and why is she there? Is she, does she know who Ed actually is? And is there an alternative motive? So those are all questions that are floating around in my mind at this point. So.
Right. Well, she is obviously played by the same actress. Chelsea's back. Her name is Isabella, and we don't get a last name, which I think is a little telling. I don't think she's an apparition.
I don't either after watching, so.
Okay. I think that she might be someone related to Kristen that thinks that Ed killed her and is coming back to try and figure it out and try and get revenge if it's true. That's my theory. And knowing what she knows about Ed by talking to Kristen, like maybe Kristen called her, like maybe they're cousins or twin sisters or whatever. She knows that he's into riddles.
Right.
And that's how she got him hooked on her by saying this riddle.
Interesting. Interesting. Once again, I like this show because it allows folks to play different characters and puts different spins and keeps us asking questions.
Right.
And, you know, once again, it's not that, you know, we're left with these questions that are nagging week.
No, they're not. I want to find out, but.
Right. And, but they give us answers and they raise more questions, but it's not in a frustrating way.
Right.
It's in a, okay, here's what's next. And you can, you know, I enjoy that. And once again, this was not a major storyline, but they're content to say, okay, let's plant this seed and we'll see where it goes from there.
Right.
You know, and it's a small part of the episode, but it leads to bigger things. So yeah, I love that about this series.
So that, how many minutes was that scene? Five? Eight,
maybe, yeah.
Somewhere in there. Okay,
yeah.
So in the space of that scene, we get, is he blowing off Oswald completely? Is he going to show up with Isabella in tow? Is Isabella related to Kristen? Is she there to lure him for some reason? Is she there why is she there? Who is she? I mean, we get all this content of questions, you know, just a whole mess of questions. And it doesn't all have to do with Isabella. Some of it's about the Oswald-Ed storyline. Some of it's about Ed. Some of it's about Ed and Kristen. Some of it's about Ed and Isabella. Is this someone that's really for Isabella? Does this mean now that Oswald, was that foreshadowing with Luke, the little kid? That now Oswald's going to push Ed down the stairs?
Right.
Or Isabella?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's so many things to wonder about here.
Yeah, it's exciting because just to think about, it would be nice to say, ooh, it would be nice to have Ed have somebody that can reciprocate his love and do it in that intelligent way and be there for him. But that's a dangerous situation to be in, even if, you know, say she doesn't have any ulterior motives, but she can be in danger because of the Penguin, you know, saying, okay, you know, I was ready to give you my heart and now somebody else has taken that spot. I'm going to punish you and punish her. And it's exciting to think about.
So many things there. And just out of that 5 minutes, we get all of these different branches that we can go off of.
Right,
and that's
exactly.
That is such great storytelling. That really is. And then, of course, in that last scene in the hospital, we get you know, well, I think this is probably why he did it, but they didn't confirm it yet. So now I'm on the edge of my seat, but not so much that I'm going to fall off.
Yeah.
You know, I can wait till the next episode, but I'm like, why didn't you just tell us? You know, so there's that too. And I just thought it was a really, really good episode. And I love the Mad Hatter. I kind of like that he's on the loose, because if they had taken him in, we wouldn't have had him on the show anymore. Barbara.
Yeah, I like the scene with Barbara and Tabitha and Jim there.
We'll bill you for the damages.
Yeah, but the little dialogue that we get that, you know, Tabitha has been hiding Butch and he's eating a lot of steak.
Right.
But, you know, Barbara's like, well, are you rekindling the love? And it's like, well, you know, maybe, you know. So there's little scenes that we get, and they're very wise with the dialogue. And I appreciate that they don't try to cram too much in. Like this episode, we had nothing with Jim. I mean, with Bruce or Alfred or Selena, mm-hmm. you know, we kind of got a break from that. And so everything wasn't crammed in there, but things felt natural. And the scenes that we had moved characters along, even if they were very short. So, you know, good job.
Right. And again, this is a show about Gotham, not Batman. So
exactly.
We don't need Batman in every episode. We have the city of Gotham to worry about.
Yeah.
I really do like that the show is about Gotham.
Right.
It's about the city that made Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I really dig it. And I like how it's also making Commissioner Gordon
mm-hmm.
at the same time. So that's kind of a story we never got told.
Yeah.
And I like that. Really, really do. Bruno Heller is really good at this. So
mm-hmm.
Am I missing anything, do you think?
The only thing I wanted to mention is we did get to see a little bit with Barnes. He gets questioned, hey, you're not walking with your crutch. Well, I don't need it anymore.
Right.
So, you know, we still – that moves that character a little farther farther along, another step. And so we're going, okay, what's going on?
A little more of the lampshade hanging.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit more. Oh, and Olga. We can't forget Olga.
Yeah. Oswald's having that conversation with her. You know, she's being the sounding board and not giving him any answers. He's just talking. Yeah. And then he says, oh, I'm going to enroll you in ESL classes. If you're going to live here, you need to speak the language.
Right. I liked Olga very much. And I read a comment on the Entertainment Weekly website that says they want to show where the Mad Hatter comes to your house and judges your china, Gordon Ramsay style. And I thought that was funny. So we have two pieces of feedback this week.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of me talking through the whole thing, let me play Phoenix's first.
Aloha, Phoenix here with a review of Follow the White Rabbit. All in all, I give this episode 7 steps ahead. In this episode, we follow Tetch, who is out for blood looking for revenge against Gordon for the accidental death of his sister. First, we have Penguin confessing to his Russian servant, who coincidentally doesn't seem to speak much English, his love for who else but the Riddler. Pony Girl Purple's reaction to the confession, I told you, I told you, I told you. Yeah, I think a lot of us called that one last week. James is caught in the classic trope of Sophie's Choice and must choose between saving the newlyweds or the cute little Tweedledee down the street. Gordon chooses a kid, of course, and turns around just in time to hear a splat of another failed relationship. If only the Flash could cross over onto Gotham, huh? Question. When the White Rabbit is standing there entranced, why does Bullock or Barnes not have the insight to say, I'm James Gordon? Is that really that far of a leap to figure out? Meanwhile, Jarvis continues on his trope quest, this time initiating the off-scene race across the city, feeding Jim clues along the way. First stop, a loft apartment with a view for a game of My So-Called Life. But Jim gets feisty with the Hatter, and even points out how his sister felt to him. But again, Jarvis is one step ahead and kidnaps Vale before Gordon's eyes. Jim finds out that Barbara spills the beans on all his dirty little secrets, including his love for Lee. Is it just me, or does he seem to be just slightly still pining for Lee from this manic reaction of his? Round two, or rather, act two, in Hatter's words, brings yet another Sophie's Choice. Barnes and Bullock arrive from nowhere to help, but aren't able to stop Hatter's trap, resulting in the electrocution of two more innocent citizens. Because, of course, we can't put Vale and Lee in any real danger. This isn't an AMC show. By the way, anybody hungry for fried chicken? The mayor, Penguin, turns into Major Mayhem, offering some choice advice to a lonely boy in a school, pushing him to succeed. With that kind of advice, who needs enemies? Meanwhile, in the most awkward kidnapping slash double murder plot ever, Vale pumps Lee for information on the blood test while Lee focuses on more important things like, maybe escaping? Jim follows the White Rabbit, gratuitous tie-in to the title, and heads off to Lee's house to commence a rescue, but not before recruiting Lee's fiancée for more awkward backup fun. Gordon surrenders his piece at the door and joins the tea party, which is really just a metaphor for exposé time. Falcone Jr. sneaks in to his own home, how convenient, to stage a rescue. But what? Unexpected plot twist. Hatter took the bullets out of the magazine. Well played. Pressed for time, Jim decides to push Jarvis's buttons, this time by punishing him with the truth over his sister's feelings. But the Mad Hatter presses him to pick who will die. Tell him Barbara, Jim. Tell him Barbara. Throw him off his game. Ah, but no. He names Lee to die, a decision which Hatter takes to mean that he loves Val more, which earns her the non-deadly wound as Hatter turns and runs off. Boy, oh boy, insane supervillains can be so daft. Shot to the head, anyone? Would have ended it and made Jim suffer. Oh, well, I guess that's bad for the ongoing plot. Meanwhile, Penguin is pining over an empty table, and we find Nigma making an impossible love connection, finding the only other riddle-loving Kringle lookalike on the planet while picking out wine. One can only wonder if this is meant to be a bottle to bring to the Penguins, with fate stepping in to save them both from what would only have been a disastrous confession for both of our favorite villains. Meanwhile, at the hospital, Jim tries to apologize to Lee, but she is not ready to hear it. Is it possible she sees through his ruse of actually being one step ahead of Hatter's plot? Perhaps he knew which one he'd pick. I think that Lee is still the one that is in Gordon's heart. As for what we shall see coming for Enigma, I have but a riddle. What is both a fruit and a time? See you all next week. Same Gotham time, same Gotham channel. Aloha.
A fruit and Aloha. A time? What nice. Is a fruit and a time? I don't know. I'll have to think about that. That was a good feedback, Phoenix.
Yeah, most definitely.
Very nice. I appreciate that. Yeah. Also, while I was listening to that, I was reminded that I was asked by two different people on whether I was going to give a Mad Hatter comic recommendation.
Ah.
My answer is no. And do you know why my reasoning is? Because I don't want to ruin the Mad Hatter for anyone. His comic book other half is so terrible. I don't mean bad as in badly written. I mean just he is brutal and I mean if you want to read the Mad Hatter, I encourage you. Yes, by all means go. But I can't in good conscience pick out a Batman comic with the Mad Hatter in it because I don't even know how to put it. They alluded to it in this episode. He doesn't treat women well.
No.
We'll put it that way. And I just, I don't really want to, I don't know. I don't want it to go out.
Right. And the thing about it is this is an Elseworlds, you know, it's right. Not the continuity. And while other ones stick closer to the main continuity, there will be differences. And
right.
He's one of those differences. So yeah. It's
although it's a not different that spin different, apparently.
Yeah, but yeah,
he's still. Close. But I do say, if you are interested in the Mad Hatter, I encourage you go out. Look it up on the DC Wikia. Just type in DC Wikia on, mm-hmm. you know, Google. It'll take you there. Look up Jervis Tech. Tech. Look him up. It'll give you episodes or issues that he's in. And, you know, download them off of Comixology and read them if you like. He is not a likable character in the least. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And... Justina asked me because she likes Alice in Wonderland, and I said, oh, no, do not read it then, because it is nothing like Alice in Wonderland. Right. So it's better that you just watch the Mad Hatter on Gotham in that case. So that is why I'm not giving you a Cougar's Comic Corner for this character. I might do that for other characters, though.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the question for me to do it on this podcast. It's just not for the Mad Hatter. As much as you guys have asked me, I've gotten probably 3 requests for that.
Nice.
Which is cool, but
yeah.
It's for the one character I just don't feel comfortable giving you a, hey, read this recommendation for. It's just not something that I'm enthusiastic giving a recommendation for. I'd give you a Joker comic before I'd give you a Mad Hatter comic because, yeah, if that says anything.
Wow, yeah.
Because the Joker is lighthearted comparatively. All right. So we get a feedback from, it looks like, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, good evening, said in my best Alfred Hitchcock Presents voice. That's how he says it. Let's get right to it this week. Uh-oh, random red shirts getting married have an even shorter life expectancy than regular random red shirts. Very true. Man, I hate it when I'm right. The world needs more people like Olga. Valerie is kind of annoying me tonight. Let's see. Lee has been threatened by Barbara and is the future daughter-in-law to Gotham's answer to Paul Sorvino's character in Goodfellas. I don't think a reporter is going to rattle her.
No.
Tetch's messenger looks like Draco Malfoy and Lurch from the Addams Family had a kid. All right, that's an image.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
That is an image. And isn't Draco on the Flash right now, yeah?
Yeah, Draco Malfoy. Yeah, he is.
That's the guy who played Draco Malfoy, right? I haven't watched any of the Harry Potter things, so I don't know. I haven't read them or anything. So I know, take away my nerd card, sorry. So Jervis appears to be a fan of both The Dark Knight and Die Hard with a Vengeance with the quote-unquote game he's forcing Jim to play. This schedule covers your duties as mayor, and this one covers your duties as kingpin of the underworld. You were this close to giving Little Luke some completely good advice there, Oswald. I'm predicting a huge future for Benedict Samuel. He's done nothing but crush it in every scene he's been on in Gotham. Okay, I'm breaking in right here. I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Benedict Samuel has been amazing in both The Walking Dead and Gotham.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. He made you hate him in The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just done, you know, the Hatter is just so different. But he's inhabiting that role. He's just playing it out. He's being dramatic. He is just doing great things. And once again, I just appreciate Gotham for taking actors and saying, okay, here's the general character. inhabit it, be, mm-hmm. you know, fill that up, make it your own. And it gives him the ability to grow and be a better actor because of it. So, yeah, he's doing great.
I agree. And if this leads to other stuff, then two thumbs up from me because mm-hmm,
definitely
he's got some chops. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Okay. Back here. I just noticed that Jervis speaks in rhymes when he gets upset. Yeah, that's kind of a thing for him. This episode is playing like a Gotham version of The Killing Joke, with Jervis in place of the Joker trying to prove a point at Jim Gordon's expense. Yeah, I felt the same way a little bit.
Yeah.
It was very Killing Joke-esque. Since Jervis uses a lot of showmanship and elements of stage magic, his house being on Blackstone Drive is a nice little homage to the Blackstone family of magicians. I didn't notice that, but that's a nice little shout
yeah,
out.
Yeah, that was a good. I didn't get that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he goes into his paragraphs instead of just his little call outs. I'm adopting a wait and see approach with Oswald's infatuation with Ed. It's the producer's universe, and I'll never be so arrogant as to tell them how to do their jobs. But I can't see how this is going to be more entertaining than Penguin and Riddler being BFFs, and I hope they prove me wrong. It's a huge risk to take a relationship that people love, Oswald and Ed being best buds, and scrapping it in favor of something they might not like. Okay, here's my side. I think they're going to nip that right in the bud. Don't you think that?
I hope so. I really do.
Yeah, I think Ed's going to show up with the chick, and that's going to be right. Shh, the end of it. I'm just kind of worried that this will be a Captain America has been Hydra all along situation created to simply cause a stir. And in a few episodes, they will essentially just say, just kidding. I am always about the story first and foremost and will accept anything that makes sense from a story perspective. So if they can show me that this does make sense, I'm on board. I've just seen things like this used for shock value too often to not be wary at this stage. Mm-hmm. This reservation aside, I like this episode a lot. Jervis is becoming my favorite character, not my most liked character, but my favorite. Yeah, I can see that, definitely. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying this character almost as much as I enjoyed Billy Bob Thornton's character on Fargo. But after so many fishless episodes in a row, I know this will be coming to an end soon, and that will be a sad day. Still, on the strength of the Mad Hatter scenes, I give this an 8.5 out of 10 Underworld Kingpin agendas. Thank you, nice. Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, now if it plays out the way I'm hoping it does, which is the I'm going to confess my love finally at this dinner table. I'm practicing it. Ed shows up with the girl. It gets nipped in the bud. Oswald gets mad and the revenge plot is now kicked in. Then I believe it. You know, if that's the way it turns, then, you know. And if it's not that way, I think it might do something similar to that.
Yeah, I think whatever they do, they're going to be good. It's going to be a good storyline. Yeah. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with that.
Me too. Yeah. I highly doubt it's going to be Oswald and Ed forever. I do think that they planned the whole Oswald thing in order to make Oswald kind of flip on Ed. I think this might have been the only way they could make that make sense.
Right, right. Exactly. So, pulling him in and getting him so involved, and he's just unaccustomed to having somebody that close and identifying. And so he's going to confuse his feelings. And then when he gets his feelings hurt, he just flips and goes mad.
I mean, that's an easy way to do that. A really easy way to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I can't say it makes me feel comfortable with it because that is a weird dynamic. But I really can see from a storytelling point of view that that's a super easy way to do it, and also to give us the squidges,
right,
out in the audience. So why don't you tell them how they can give their feedback, like Chris and Phoenix?
Right. So our feedback deadline is Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. You can call 304-837-2278, or you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. There you can type out a message, you can attach an audio file, or you can use the SpeakPipe widget to share your vocal feedback. You can find us on Twitter at GothamGSM. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes, and then you can subscribe to the podcast and all the other great GSM shows. So that's check right. it out.
And, you know, I keep forgetting to add this to our document, but you can also email us directly at gotham@goldenspiralmedia.com. So there's that as well. We'll get that sent directly to us.
Nice.
And that way, you know, you can just jabber away. It comes to the same mailbox.
Right.
So there's that. And now I have spoilers. Where are we? Meanwhile, back at Oswald's mansion, where he's sitting and waiting. He's just sitting there, see? Too many meanwhiles happening. Next week is Red Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And the description is as such. After coming in contact with a substance by the hand of Mad Hatter, Jim Gordon gets led on a psychedelic trip and must confront his past, present, and future. Meanwhile, Penguin struggles. Oh, sorry. Meanwhile, Penguin struggles with Nygma's new relationship on the all-new Mad City Red Queen episode of Gotham, airing Monday, October 31st. Ooh, spooky Halloween. At 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox.
Right.
So, see, there's the struggly. Now, I think it's funny that we're getting the Mad Hatter psychedelic trip thing happening. And a past, present, and future thing. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
What is he going
to
see?
It's
going
to be interesting, yeah, to see how they go with it and how, what kind of, you know, fantasies or reality that Jim thinks the future is going to look like. And, ooh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he going to see a Batman sort of scenario happening?
Yeah. I mean, is he going to see that? Is he going to be imagining life with him with Valerie, or is he going to see himself back with Lee or somebody totally different? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, is he going to see his role as commissioner?
I was thinking he might see himself as a Batman figure in the future.
Ooh,
maybe.
Yeah. Interesting.
Who knows? It could be all sorts of... I love this show that it just keeps you guessing.
Yeah.
And you can theorize on anything because anything can happen.
Yeah,
it
definitely
has its own mythology, which I love.
Yeah, yeah.
So, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait. And hopefully there'll be some Bruce because, of course... He's in his mind, and Bruce is a big part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll probably see Bruce a little bit in there, yeah? Very cool. And also, you put up the pictures this week.
Yeah.
On the Facebook page. Thank you, Jeff, for doing that. And they're very nice pictures.
Yeah.
Some very interesting things. So check those out on our Facebook page.
Yeah,
if
they're
you'd like
there
to
in
see
the
those.
Albums. Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't wait. It'll be a spooky Halloween. All right. So, are you ready to go and let these nice people go and we'll talk to them next week? Are you all ready for that?
I'm ready.
All right. So, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat!